On this program are those of the host and the participants.
All right, greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. We have a terrific show for you today. Our guest is going to be on the line from Boston, Massachusetts, Susan Lin. Susan Lin is an instructor in psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and associate director of the Media Center at Judge Baker Children's Center in Boston. She's an award-winning producer and ventriloquist, and internationally known for her pioneering work using puppets as therapeutic tools with children. She's also the co-founder of the coalition Stop Commercial Exploitation of Children. Susan Lin is the author of the brand new book, Consuming Kids, The Hostile Takeover of Childhood. She has been characterized by Howard Gardner, a leading psychologist, as a hero of our times. And it's an honor for Media Matters to welcome Susan Lin to our show today. Susan, are you there?
I'm here. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm delighted you're with us. And congratulations on your new book.
Well, thanks.
Is this your first book?
It is.
How long did it take you to write?
It took, I guess, maybe 2.5 years from the start to publication.
Well, it is a terrific introduction to the subject, having just read it. And, in fact, I should say that I'm using it in my undergraduate class this coming year.
Oh, you are? Oh, great. And so that's an honor.
Well, it's a well-deserved honor. Why don't we start, because I think this is an issue, as important as it is, and as any parent is familiar with this issue, I think, you don't even have to be a parent to be familiar with it. I don't know if everyone's fully aware of the dimensions of what you're writing about.
Yeah.
How much money is spent? How significant is marketing to children? And how has it changed over the past, 10, 20 years?
Right. The best figure that I've been able to get is that corporations spend about $15 billion annually marketing to kids. I think that's an underestimate, actually. I think it's probably more than that. And because a lot of marketing is really hard to sort of quantify. So it's about $15 million. That's 2.5 times what was spent about a decade ago.
So
there's been a huge escalation over the past 10, 12 years.
Vastly more than the rate of inflation.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And what does that mean in terms of, like, the amount of commercials a kid is exposed to in the United States today?
Well, kids see about, I say on average, about 40,000 commercials a year on television alone. But I think what we really have to remember, and what's hard for people, I think, to get their minds around, is that commercials are really just a small piece of the marketing that's going on today.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just commercials. It's product placement. When companies pay to have a product be within the content of a video game or a television program, either as a prop or scenery or even a plot point. So, there's product placement, there's brand licensing where media characters, their images are sold, to be on candy boxes or cereal boxes or clothing. So there's that as well. And there's viral marketing, which started out on the internet. And
viral marketing, that sounds pretty insidious.
Pretty infectious, right?
Yeah, infectious.
It is insidious. It started out as an internet thing where, marketers would infiltrate chat rooms that kids were known to be using in order to sell products. But now it means any kind of word-of-mouth marketing. And it's not real word-of-mouth marketing, it's fake word-of-mouth marketing. So, companies go into neighborhoods and they find the coolest kid. They go around saying, who's the coolest kid, until they find the kid who says, I'm the coolest kid. And then, they will ply, him or her with products to give away to friends and to, sort of tout to, buddies. There's even a company called Girls Intelligence Agency, the GIA as opposed to the CIA, that has co-opted pajama parties among preteens and uses the pajama parties not only to, get kids hooked on products, but also to get kids' responses to products and, see how the products are doing and the kids' thoughts about them. So it's even infiltrated sort of the social fabric of children's lives. And, we haven't even, talked about marketing in schools, which in 2000 the GAO said, was a growth industry.
We're talking today to Susan Lin, author of the new book, Consuming Kids, here on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. If you want to call in with a question for Susan Lin, the number is 333-9455, our toll-free number, 800-222-9455. We're talking about the hostile takeover of childhood in the United States by marketers. So kids are inundated in ads. The number has grown. There's product placement. There's viral marketing. There's all sorts of branding that's being done.
There's guerrilla marketing.
Guerrilla
marketing. Grassroots marketing. I mean, it's just, there's something that was just trademarked immersive marketing.
So we're marinating kids in commercialism, so to speak.
Yeah, marinating. That's a great, they're being pickled by commercialism.
And, but does, can this possibly work? I mean, how can kids remember, you know, if they're getting zillions of ads a day or a week or a month, I mean, wouldn't they not work? Because kids are just, their brains kid of overload with all these messages.
Well, you know, the advertisers are concerned about that. I mean, I read a lot of advertising literature, sort of what the advertisers are saying to themselves about what they do, and they're concerned about that. So now there's something called shockvertising, which is, you know, they're afraid that their messages are going to get lost, so they're making them as shocking as possible. You know, like Benetton's Death Row advertising a few years ago, or a lot of Calvin Klein ads, really, you know, extremely provocative, either with sex or violence or sex and violence kind of together. So, I mean, that's something that marketers are concerned about. But I think that a lot of the advertising, it's not even conscious. We're not even conscious that we're being affected by it, but we are. So it's not so much that the kids can necessarily make the connection between, you know, the exact commercial and the brand, but they get a feeling about the brand, or, you know, it's associated with being cool or being fun. It's going to make their life better, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, I'm a parent, and also I've studied this issue nowhere near as closely as you have. And it seems that one of the other areas that the expansion of marketing to children has assumed in the past 10 years or so has been going to younger and younger children.
Right.
And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that's, I mean, most of this, I mean, all of it is shocking and distressing to me, you know, which is, you know, again, why I wrote the book. But the notion of marketing to babies is really, really upsetting. And in fact, I think that's what sort of tipped me over the edge about it and made me feel like I really had to do something about it. Because I was concerned about it before on a personal level and also with the kids that I work with, but I didn't kind of see it on a larger level until Teletubbies. Teletubbies was imported by PBS, you know, my PBS station, in 1998, and it was marketed to parents as educational for children as young as one. And when I saw that, I was just so outraged because, you know, in fact, nobody knows how one-year-olds understand television. There's no way that anybody could know whether a television program was educational for kids as young as one. And here was PBS with the slogan, Parents Trust PBS. You know, that's their slogan for their children's television program. And there they were, you know, marketing this program as educational for babies. And what that did is unleash just a welter of advertising directed at babies. And Teletubbies, which was essentially a scam, you know, just came with oodles and oodles and oodles of products. And you know, the goal is what the marketers want is cradle-to-grave brand loyalty. I mean, that's what they say. They talk about, you know, owning them. If you get them while they're young, you'll own them for life.
Yeah, because you really have to wonder, why would a marketer be aiming at a one-year-old or a 15-month-old baby? Because it's not like they're going down to this mall with a credit card.
Well, you know, no, but their parents are. And what they're doing is really trying to imprint isn't exactly the right word, but it's kind of what comes to my mind. It's sort of imprint their logos or their brand on babies' brains. And one thing that we know about babies now because of, you know, brain imaging, I mean, we know that their brains are developing at a really rapid rate and that they're making connections that they're going to, you know, carry with them for life. And so they are really affected by their environment. I mean, that's why people who care about children are pouring so much energy into the early years, you know, 0 to 3. I mean, a lot of really, really important attitudes and behaviors begin to develop at that time. So the marketers really want to get in on that. And so at this point, it's really hard to find baby products that don't have either media characters on them or logos on them. And, I mean, I was talking with a parent the other day who said, well, you know, the only diapers I can find, I have to choose between, you know, Looney Tunes and Sesame Street, essentially. And then she said, but it's hard for me to understand. I'm queasy about this, but it's hard for me to understand what's wrong with that. And what's wrong with it is that you just can't think about diapers. You have to think about diapers and rattles and teething rings and bathtubs and sheets and pillowcases and, you know, crib toys. And the kids are just inundated with images. And then these, like, you know, Teletubbies or, you know, Grover from Sesame Street. And then these images are then used to sell food and toys and other products.
You're listening to Media Matters on WILL AM 580. We're coming to you live today. I'm Bob McChesney, your host. Our guest is Susan Lin, who is an instructor at the Harvard Medical School and also the co-founder of Stop Commercial Exploitation of Children. We're talking about her brand new book published by New Press, Consuming Kids, The Hostile Takeover of Childhood. And much of the book, which we'll be talking about today, goes through chapter by chapter through the effects of all this marketing and advertising to children. And we're going to go into these effects in considerable detail. If you would like to call up and have any questions for Susan Lin, the number here at Media Matters is 333-9455. Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455. And Susan, in your first chapter, you call it Notes from the Underground, you talk about attending one of these marketing conferences.
Right.
And I again, you know, this is an enormous industry, as you outline in the book, as you talk about. So you go inside the other side to see how people think about kids. And what did you learn at one of these conferences?
I learned that the people doing this are very enthusiastic, they're very competent, and a lot of them are very young and very creative, and they're not thinking a whole lot, or if at all, about the impact of their work on children. And that's one of the things that really struck me. And I've attended, you know, I'm a psychologist, I've worked with children all my professional life, and I've attended a lot of conferences about children. And this is the first one I ever attended where nobody was saying, well, is this good for children? Is our work good for children? I mean, nobody was asking that question. And I suppose it may sound naive, but I found that kind of surprising.
And what were they talking about then? If they weren't talking about whether something was good for children, what dominated the discussions?
Whether it was effective, what kind of advertising was most effective with kids. I think it was the CEO of Toys R Us got up and talked about how, you know, at Toys R Us, customers aren't customers anymore, they're guests. And that's kind of interesting. I mean, the notion of making stores more like lifestyle places and, you know, places, you know, to hang out or things like that. They talked about that. They talked about children's vulnerabilities. And, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that I found it also very troubling. You know, child psychologists work with advertising companies to, you know, find the best ways to hone commercials. And one of the ways that they do that is to really look at how children are vulnerable and then gear their ad or their marketing to exploit that vulnerability.
I mean, that is a standard advertising approach.
Sure.
Time told that you tell people there's something wrong with them,
right,
so the product is the solution. If you tell people, you know, they're doing great just as they are, they have no reason to buy your product.
Right. So I'm not fond of advertising to adults either, but advertising to children, they're so much more vulnerable. I mean, kids, really young kids, can't tell the difference between a commercial and a program, although that's getting harder for anybody to do at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And until the age of about 8, kids can't even identify, they don't understand persuasive intent. I mean, and that's research that is good research both from the advertising world and from, you know, the academic world. They just don't get it, kids, until about the age of 8. So they can't even begin to defend against it when they're really young. I mean, they tend to believe what they hear, and they can't understand that somebody's, you know, picking words and images specifically to manipulate them into doing something.
Now, I recall at a personal level, Susan, I recall when I was a kid, and I don't remember the age. I was so naive, I might have been older than 8. But really being shocked to find out that commercials were paid for. I thought they were just part of the media landscape. I mean, it was astounding to me. It's like learning there was no Santa Claus.
Wow. Well, that's amazing.
Yeah, well, I guess I was a particularly naive kid.
I don't remember. What I remember is desperately wanting Hostess cupcakes because of the surprise inside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember really wanting the things that I saw on television. And, you know, and we saw, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but...
I'm 51, so
well,
I won't keep
so
you
we're
in
we're close to the same age. I mean, we saw so much less marketing than kids do today. I mean, kids 20 years ago saw less marketing.
Yeah, we lived in that ghetto where you just had a little pocket on Saturday mornings on television, and there was none at school, very little at colleges or universities.
Right. Well, there was some in schools. I mean, those industrial films, which I also remember loving as a kid, were actually, a lot of them were corporate films, but it's not any.
Yeah, but those were things like ball bearings manufacturers
right,
and stuff.
Right, that's right, or electricity.
Yeah.
You know, Hemo the Magnificent.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't in the market for a generator.
No.
At age 7 or whatever it was.
Right.
Well,
it's so much different now. I mean, every company has corporate sponsored materials in schools. And that's a thing that I think people have to realize. I mean, because people say, well, what's wrong with the commercial? If it was only one commercial or a few commercials, you know, it wouldn't be so distressing, but it's really permeated every aspect of children's lives. They can't get away from it.
And
it's not good for them. And we know, I mean, you know, marketing is linked to, the childhood obesity, eating disorders, youth violence, precocious, irresponsible sexuality. It's just, and it has, you know, a not a great impact on kids' play and creativity.
We're talking to Susan Lynn today in Media Matters, author of the new book, Consuming Kids, The Hostile Takeover of Childhood. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters on WILL AM 580. Our phone number here, 333-9455, and the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Upcoming guests in Media Matters. One week from today, we'll have our longtime and frequent guest, John Nichols. He will be reporting after having spent a week at the Democratic Convention in Boston and talking about his brand-new book, Dick, about Vice President Dick Cheney. 2 weeks from today, we have Robert Greenwald as our guest. Robert Greenwald is the producer of the brand new film sponsored by Move On called Outfox, which is a critique of the Fox News channel. 3 weeks from today, we have Urbana's own Sasha Meinrath here to talk about wireless internet access and the national, the local, national, even global movement to set up wireless internet systems and what's going on there. And a conference will be taking place in Urbana at the end of the month on that subject. And then finally, 4 weeks from today, we have another frequent guest on Media Matters, Laura Flanders, the journalist and radio personality, here to talk about her brand new book on women in media. So let us now go to our phone lines. We have a couple of callers who are patiently waiting. And line 4, San Francisco, you're on the air with Susan Lynn.
Good morning. I'm just curious who Dr. Lynn may be supporting in the presidential election. I'm partisan. I just heard Ralph Nader in San Francisco in a speech decry the targeting of children with unhealthy products. And he said, quote, "They call it marketing. I call it electronic child molesters." And he spoke
said
against
that a lot.
Tobacco and drugs, and he said, "Hook them early, and then launder their money through prestigious banks." Maybe a comment?
Well, you know, I mean, Ralph Nader has been an outspoken critic of marketing to kids. I think he's rather, you know, very good on that. You know, to be honest, for myself, I'm so concerned about the current administration that. For me, speaking for myself, I would be worried about supporting a third-party candidate at this time. But Ralph Nader has always been great about this.
Now, on these issues, and I want to get to this later because your book has a strong concluding chapter which talks about the policy measures which can be taken
right.
to protect children. I mean, this is not an issue that's shown up except for Ralph Nader about it from any of the presidential candidates that I know of, at least
no.
out front. But from what you're studying of the president and the likely Democratic candidate, John Kerry, Do you think there are differences there, if there's people concerned about these issues, that one candidate would be better than the other?
When the Bush administration, and you know this, I'm sure, but when the Bush administration was getting ready to gear up for the PR war, PR for the war in Iraq, Andrew Card was asked why he was waiting until September to start talking about it, and he said, "You can't. Everybody knows you can't push a new product in August." I think that the notion of selling a war as a product is really kind of revolting to me. Neither the Democrats nor the Republicans are particularly good on this issue. I mean, that's really the truth. And it cuts funny politically. There are people on the religious right who are very outspoken about marketing to kids, particularly around sex. Phyllis Schlafly, for instance, has said some very good things about marketing in schools.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are other things at stake in this election besides marketing to kids. And I don't think either candidate is particularly great on that.
Susan, as I'm listening to you, it strikes me that I read your book, I studied this area myself, and I've done my own share of public talks on these subjects. I've yet to have anyone come up to me and sort of say, isn't it great how much marketing we're doing to kids? I really love the way we're getting those 15-month-year-old boys and girls and bombarding them with ads. I mean, there's no voter base. I mean, no politician can lose votes, can they, by making this an issue? It seems like it'd be a real winner.
Well, they can lose corporate support, and I think that that's what they're afraid of. In 1978, as you know, the FTC said that there should be a ban on marketing to children under 8, and within 2 years, Congress took away their power to regulate marketing to children at all. And that was because of a lot of corporate pressure on Congress, and I think that that is something that politicians are afraid of. They're afraid of losing that support, and what the corporations want people to think is that it's hopeless. On the other hand, there has been some movement in Congress that I think is actually pretty interesting and hopeful. A couple of weeks ago, Tom Harkin got up on the floor of the Senate and was morally outraged about marketing to children, and also, came up with, put forth the Help America Act, which includes giving the FTC the power to regulate marketing to kids. I mean, that's pretty amazing in this age of deregulation. I mean, from my perspective, having that even introduced in the Senate is a real victory. My coalition, the Coalition to Stop Commercial Exploitation of Children, just did a briefing in Congress for the Children's Caucus, and we did one a couple of years ago, and we had double the number of people come who came 2 years ago. And we actually had, congressional aides saying, we want to introduce legislation about this. There's some talk of a bill similar to Harkin's being introduced in the House. I think that that's a really good sign. They're small steps, but that's actually more than I could even have hoped for a few years ago. A few years ago, old activists were telling us not to even mention the notion of banning marketing to kids.
We're talking
not to mention regulation at all. And now there's actually more bills about regulating marketing to kids in Congress than there have been in years, even in this with this administration.
We're talking to Susan Lynn, author of the new book, Consuming Kids, The Hostile Takeover of Childhood. Today on Media Matters, I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The phone number is here, 333-9455, the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air with Susan Lynn.
Yeah, first I'd like to applaud you for your book. It's something that's been needed for a long time.
Thanks.
The problem is whether the it's actually the book is targeted the right individual, the parents. The problem is whether the parents get it, that they're consumed. You know, that's one of my big things that I'm concerned about. The parents are so consumed anyway, and all of a sudden, I certainly hope they get the message. I hope they all read the book, and the next point is that they also get the message too. Any reaction there? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this goes back to marketing to babies, is that parents are under enormous amounts of pressure. I mean, this is a really hard time to be a parent, even without marketing to kids. I mean, there's, you know, both parents working, lots of single-parent families. Parents are really stressed, and that makes it more difficult. There's not enough, public funding for schools, for adequate daycare, you know, that kind of thing. That makes it very difficult. What I find is making being a parent even more difficult is the marketing industry purposely comes between parents and children and undermines parents. And the marketing industry spin is that it's completely up to parents and parents should just be able to say no. At the same time, in 1998, this company called Western Media International did a study on nagging. It wasn't a study to help parents cope with nagging. It was a study to help corporations help children nag more effectively.
Wow.
God, really?
You know, they call it the nag factor, and it's been very common. It's a very common advertising strategy. They're getting a little scared about using those words anymore.
It certainly worked with my kids, I can tell you that.
It's hard. I mean, nagging is it's stressful for parents, and you know, to have your kids nagging all the time is difficult. And you can say no a lot, that's true, except that what child development experts tell parents, especially parents of pre-adolescents and adolescents, is to pick your battle. Pick your battle. So on the one hand, you have corporations getting kids to nag more, and then you have these child development experts saying, pick your battles. And my question is, which battle should parents pick? Is it the food battle, the computer game battle, the violence battle, the precocious responsible sexuality battle, the materialism battle? I mean, which one? Which one should they pick? And whichever one they pick, you know, they're going to be losing on all the other ones.
But they also put, unfortunately, parents are on such a guilt trip because they're not spending the time, you know, especially in big markets where everybody's working, they're spending so much time, so there's sort of that guilt trip.
Right. And yes, they're feeling guilty, and then the advertisers, you know, prey on that even more. You know, get this for your child. You know, your child will feel loved. Or with babies, what's even worse, especially with these, you know, these videos for babies, which is, you know, what emerged after Teletubbies, Baby Einstein, Baby Genius, Baby Road Trip, Baby Gourmet, all these videos for babies. These will raise your child's IQ. These will, you know, get your kids into Harvard. These will make your kids smarter. Everything that's being marketed to kids now is called educational. Everything is called educational. You know, these videos, there's no evidence that they're good for babies. And from what we know, I mean, they're really antithetical to what babies need, which is to be, you know, exploring the world tactically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry. you know, and so it's, I mean, parents just, they don't even know which way to turn. And then they remember, you know, their own days with Sesame Street. They have all these warm, nostalgic feelings about it. They're not thinking about the fact that, you know, you give your child Grover's on juice, or Elmo. I mean, Elmo is, you know, this toy that Sesame Workshop keeps putting out every year, which each year it does one new dance. So there's Chicken Dance Elmo and Hokey Pokey Elmo. And the thing about toys like that, which are these electronic toys that do only one thing, that are being marketed to parents and babies, is that you know, the kids get bored with them, and that's great for the marketers because, you know, that you just go and buy the next one. Well, you're done with Hokey Pokey Elmo, now buy Chicken Dance Elmo. You know, the other thing is that this is really interesting. There was a Harris poll of youth marketers that just came out a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in that poll, 91% of youth marketers say that young people are being marketed to in ways they don't even notice. 73% of youth marketers, these are people doing the marketing, say most companies put pressure on children to pester their parents to buy things. 73% of them. 72% say most companies put pressure on kids to grow up faster than they should. 61% advertising to children begins at too young an age. And 58% of the people who are doing the marketing say that there's too much marketing and advertising directed towards children.
That's extraordinary.
Isn't it? It's an industry just in a lot of
denial. These are the people actually doing it saying that. Now, we're talking to Susan Lynn today on Media Matters. Susan Lynn's the author of the new book, Consuming Kids. And I should add, Susan, that you have a chapter just on the nag factor.
Right.
In your book, you also have a fascinating chapter that sort of gets to the effects of all this marketing and hyper-commercialism. And before we get to our next callers, and we have several callers waiting to speak with you, I just want to ask you to talk a little bit about that, which is what you call the endangered species, play and creativity.
Yeah.
Because it strikes me that this really gets to the heart and soul of what you're arguing.
And you know, it's the hardest one to explain in a soundbite. Which is, I'm really glad that we actually get a chance to talk about it. You know, play is the capacity to play is inherent in all of us and in children. And it is the foundation of creativity and the foundation of being able to separate who you are from who the outside world is. It's the foundation of art and religion and critical thinking. And what's happening with marketing is, and what's being marketed to kids is that it is really limiting children's capacity to play creatively. And that is going to have a fundamental effect on the rest of their lives and on how they experience the world and how they are in the world and how they act in the world. That's really, really, really troubling. I mean, a lot of the toys being marketed, you know, to children today, the electronic toys like Chicken Dance, Elmo, really, they engender passivity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't, all you do is watch Elmo dance. It's not like blocks where you build things or puzzles where you're figuring out how things go together. I mean, using blocks and you know, doing puzzles, those are really life skills that kids are gaining. I mean, one of the few things I ever really taught my daughter was, if a puzzle piece doesn't go in one way, try it another way.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fundamental life skill, that kind of flexible thinking. And that, and kids are being robbed of that today by the toys that are being marketed to them and the media toys. And one of the things that people, that research has found, is that kids play less creative with toys that are directly linked to media. You know, and these films or these television programs that are out now have zillions and zillions of toys.
Yes, Susan, we have a full bank of callers
wanting
to speak to you. Let's go back to the phone lines. Our guest today, again, Susan Lynn, author of the new book, Consuming Kids, The Hostile Takeover of Childhood. Line 2, Champaign, you're on the air with Susan Lynn.
Yes. I was wondering if you see any difference between the toys that are marketed that are just, for example, say, action figures that, say, like, for example, Ernie and Bert, where those are popular because kids watch Sesame Street, and so Ernie and Bert are popular, but the goal of Sesame Street is the original show, Sesame Street, versus, say, something like the Yu-Gi-Oh cards, where it seems like the whole point of the Yu-Gi-Oh shows and the cards and everything was the idea that this whole thing was produced with the idea that the kids would only enjoy the game if they bought more and more and more and more cards.
In 1984, the FCC deregulated children's television, and that's when it became possible to create programs like the one you described in order to sell toys. And now, you know, that's a common, that's the reason that children's programming is developed, and most children's programming, you know, comes with just tons and tons of toys. That collecting cards comes from Pokemon, and, you know, again, it was sort of brilliant and diabolical. You know, the theme song of Pokemon is Gotta Catch 'em All, Gotta Catch 'em All, Gotta Catch 'em All. And so part of that is Gotta Catch All the Cards, Gotta Catch All the Products. I mean, it's, again, I read a lot about that as I was writing my book.
Susan,
the whole notion of collections. There's good content in Sesame Street. Some good content, and I have some quarrels with Sesame Street. They've certainly done better on diversity than probably any other program. But there's not any difference in the marketing. And that's, I think, what I've really been struggling with is, can a program be considered good for children if it partners with a fast food company when childhood obesity is a major public health problem? I mean, how can we say that programs are good for children if they promote eating junk food, or they promote, you know, or they make it harder for kids to play creatively? I mean, the marketing that's associated with Sesame Street now is just disgraceful.
You know, Susan, you have a chapter on the marketing of food products and nutrition and the epidemic of obesity. Also, another couple chapters you have in the book sort of relate a little bit to what we've been talking about in this last question, which is notions of violence and sexuality and how they are being marketed and used. Is there a difference in how marketers approach boys and girls?
Yes, and you can see that in the way that fruit snacks are marketed to them. There are these same fruit snacks, and one has a picture of Barbie and one has a picture of Spider-Man. Well, which one is being marketed? You know, what's being marketed to whom?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with those. Sure, I mean, with boys, they tend to market power and dominion. With girls, it's more, you know, this kind of plastic sexuality and submissiveness. There are differences. Although one of the things that's happening is that there's been more, it's like the whole feminist movement has been co-opted by marketing. And the notion of feminism now is that girls should be just like bullies, boy bullies. The girls mm-hmm. should be just like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's being marketed to kids now. And in fact, incidents of bullying, you know, are up among girls.
We're talking to Susan Lynn today on Media Matters. Our phone number here, if you'd like to call in with a question or comment, 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines to our toll-free line. Terre Haute, Indiana, you're on the air with Susan Lynn.
Hello.
Hello.
I want to thank you both for this excellent program. I heard a story yesterday from a mother who asked her teenage son to take 10 items that he owned and find out through the internet where the items were made, and every single item was made in another country and often in a sweatshop. This teenager was a wonderful example. He decided he would no longer wear any item that had advertising on it, but he also had a very difficult time finding anything that was made in this country or that was made by people making a living wage. It's a very interesting research project for teenagers.
Yeah, it's a great thing for a parent to do. I mean, that's a really good, it would be a really good classroom assignment. That's great.
Thank you.
And it's upsetting.
Yeah, it certainly is. Now, another issue you talk about is, you know, in addition to obesity in the book, is alcohol and tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was under the impression that tobacco advertisers, you know, they don't do Joe Camel anymore. You can't do cigarette ads on TV. Kids are really safe from being affected by cigarette advertising.
Well, yeah, they're not, you know, they're not safe at all. I mean, one of the things that the tobacco companies do is market clothing and accessories with tobacco logos on them.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that they're marketing to kids are sweet cigarettes, chocolate-flavored cigarettes. They come from India. I think they're called, I'm not sure, I can't remember what they're called, but they look like little packages of candy or little packages of candy cigarettes, and they're sweet, they're flavored. I mean, those are being marketed, you know, directly to kids.
How important is the youth market to cigarette manufacturers and to drink alcohol
producers? It's
absolutely
essential to both of them. I mean, if you don't start smoking by the age of 19, it's not likely you're going to start smoking. So how can the tobacco industry not be marketing to kids? I mean, if they're going to survive, you
mm-hmm.
know, as far as they're concerned, they have to do it. So, you know, I mean, I think they're finding, you know, a lot of ways to get around the settlement. And the same is true of alcohol marketing. I mean, I think the Budweiser frogs, for instance, you know, were the favorite commercials of, you know, 8-year-olds. Anytime you see an animated cartoon,
mm-hmm.
An animated commercial, it's aimed at children. I mean, because that's one of the things that if you read marketing stuff, that's what they say. Kids really like cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
They like cartoon characters. That's why when you walk down the grocery store, you see boxes of cereals, even the ones that don't have media cartoon characters, have their own cartoon characters that they're developing.
Let's go
and
back.
And the same is true of alcohol.
Yeah, let's go back to the phone lines right now for another call. Line one, Chicago, you're on the air with Susan Lim.
Good afternoon. I congratulate you on your work. I enjoyed hearing you so much in that film, The Corporation, which
I saw
in Chicago last weekend and recommend to everybody. The nag factor was a big high point among many high points in the film. The interviews with you were juxtaposed with a blonde researcher who was talking about all the techniques to reach kids very, very early. That is a huge concern. I want to come back to her. My concern is the status of things that we learn in school having particular impact on us as we grow up, thinking that what we're taught in school must be truer than what we're hearing out in the world. And I know from my late mother's experience that 100 years ago, the cattle and the dairy and beef marketers got into the schools saying you had to have so many servings per day of those things. And 50 years ago in high school, we were pressured heavily to sell magazines at a campaign that was not something that was exactly voluntary. Also, the persistence of cancer, known cancer-causing pesticides and things used on our fruits and vegetables. We're maybe told to eat a lot of those, but not told what some of the dangers of excess cholesterol and excess pesticides might be. How do we learn something other than that? And also, are we taught on this other track that selling is a valid occupation, and you sell no matter what you have to do? How do we learn that no holds barred is okay to market to other people as a career?
You know, you're raising, I think, a whole lot of questions. One thing I want to say is, when you're talking about marketing in schools, and the caller who asked about, you know, making a decision about who you're going to vote for in this election, one thing to think about is which candidate might be more likely to promote more public funding for public spaces. Like, you know, because that's what happens is that... Like public schools or museums, which are also just sort of hotbeds of marketing to children at the moment. You know, if there's less and less public space, there's more likely to be corporate space, and the corporate space, of course, is marketing. So anyway, I just have been, you know, sort of thinking that through as we've been talking, and that's one thing I think that people, you know, should probably think about if they're concerned about this issue. But certainly the marketing in schools, I mean, I think that what you just said is true. The kids, however they feel about school, they may not like it, but they believe or they know that school is supposed to be good for them. And so school carries a lot of weight. And if a school has McDonald's in to do an assembly, for instance, then they're saying McDonald's is good. And McDonald's, you know, comes in and does all sorts of assemblies for kids, you know, mandatory assemblies on job interviewing.
And Susan, isn't it the case that advertising in schools, I mean, parents can turn on the TV dial and flip and see what's on MTV or Nickelodeon or one of these channels, Cartoon Network, but they really don't have an idea what goes on for their kids in terms of the advertising they're exposed to once they're at school?
No, they don't. And not only that, what happens with especially corporate-sponsored curricula or Channel One, which is this corporate-sponsored newscast that I think is in 12,000 schools around the country, what happens is that it bypasses community control of curricula. And what this means is that one corporation is deciding what kind of news that kids should get, or one corporation is deciding what kind of information kids should get about ecology or the food pyramid or, you know, or whatever. And that's very concerning. I mean, and really, you know, goes to the heart of, you know, what is education supposed to be about? You know, in the way that people learn that maybe a no-holds-barred attitude towards profit or selling, I mean, they learn that through, you know, the ethics and the morals of the people around them and of their environment.
This is an issue, commercialization of schools, K through 12 schools. It's also a local issue. People can change in their own school districts, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't have to rely on President Bush or Kerry to carry the ball here.
Right. I mean, if you're really interested in doing local activism, marketing in schools is a really good place to begin. And I also believe that with the Child Nutrition Act that was just signed into law, that schools are going to have to come up with nutrition policies. So this is a great time, you know, to try to kick fast food or, you know, soda machines or whatever out of schools.
We're talking to Susan Lynn today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Susan Lynn is the author of the brand new book, Consuming Kids, The Hostile Takeover of Childhood, just published by New Press, and we're glad to have her as our guest today. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got a couple of callers who've been very patient. Line two from cyberspace. Please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can indeed.
I had a question about cool country of origin labeling, which Congress passed, and Ann Veneman, the Secretary of Agriculture, has refused to pass any regulations enforcing it at the behest of the meat packers in this country. It's basically supported by farmers. My question is, since we do have NAFTA and our vegetable industry is moving south of the border to Mexico, what assurances do we have that they're not using DDT and spraying tomatoes that come in the grocery stores in Champaign-Urbana unlabeled?
Well,
Susan, is this up your alley?
It's not up my alley, although it does remind me of something, just the whole pesticide thing, and that is that I was just having a conversation with someone who was talking about the United States Soccer Association, Youth Soccer Association, which has as one of its corporate sponsors Chemlon,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, is on the dirty dozen of some of environmental groups of for their pesticides, and they are using the American Youth Soccer Association list to market their pesticides directly to kids. I mean, it's just another awful thing, but this is not, what your caller just asked about is not up my alley at all.
Sure, we have another caller I want to get to, but before we do, I'm just curious, when you make your public talks or make your arguments or get in debates on the subject, what are the arguments that are used against your points? What does the other side have to say? I mean, what are the justifications and rationalizations and explanations and defenses of the marketing to children?
It's all up to parents. You know, it's just up to parents.
Mm-hmm.
Children are too intelligent to be sucked in by marketing. Everybody knows that they're more savvy now.
Then why are they marketing to them?
Yeah, exactly. They say that it's unfair to call it predatory marketing because they're really not taking advantage or unfair advantage of kids. They say that it's a free speech issue. They say that it's...
You know, let's stop on that last one because you have a chapter that talks about it. That seems like one... The other ones sound, frankly, like a lot of public relations BS.
Right.
But that one, it's a free speech. It's a First Amendment issue. How do you respond to that?
I'm not a lawyer. I really struggled with First Amendment issues. I'm a strong believer in the First Amendment, and, you know, there are a couple of things. One of them is I really question the notion of corporate speech and commercial speech and whether it really should be included under First Amendment protections as much as it is today. I know that's the way the Supreme Court's been ruling, although Supreme Court rulings can change with popular opinion, as we've seen, you know, with Plessy versus Ferguson and then Brown versus Board of Education. So that can change. So I question the whole issue of commercial speech and whether it should be have free speech protection. But also, children are often, we make special cases for children because we recognize that they're so vulnerable. And even if you think that corporate speech deserves the protection of the First Amendment, well, what about kids and what about their special vulnerabilities? And there is precedent for that.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines. If we can, we have two callers waiting patiently, and we'll try to get both of them in before the show ends. Line 4, Chicago, you're on the air with Susan Lynn.
Yeah, hi. Regarding the nagging factor, somehow I can understand what you're saying, and yet your argument somehow doesn't hold water with me to a certain extent. Anyhow, I say this by contrasting the situation now with the way I and my brothers were brought up. I'm 76 years old, so the my childhood was in the 1930s, basically. And I and my brothers knew how to nag, but we never got anywhere. And this was basically because, particularly my father, would take us aside and talk rationally and give us a rational argument as to why our desires just didn't make sense. And we usually agreed. And I think it's a matter of the parents being equipped mentally to raise their kids. I think parents these days are just not equipped, for the most part, in their understanding of social and political forces. They're lacking in education as far as the public schools are concerned.
Caller, we've only got about 30 seconds left for an answer, and I've got one other caller, so let me let Dr. Lynn or Susan Lynn answer that, respond to you.
You know, if that's true, I mean, if parents aren't doing as good a job as you think that they should be doing, then don't you think they need help? And why is it okay for companies to prey on that? I mean, how is it in our best interest to have kids growing up in an environment where their parents are overwhelmed, they're being encouraged to nag, and they're sort of exposed to all this excessive materialism? I mean, everybody says my kids are fine, but what about other people's children? If parents aren't doing a good enough job, don't we need to help them?
If everyone's saying their kids are fine, I think they better pay a little closer attention to what's going on.
Right, I think so too. Although that is another argument, yeah. I guess.
Let's go to a line one now. Crystal Lake, our last caller, you're on the air with Susan Lynn.
I agree with her. Corporations have too much free speech, shouldn't have any, because they're not people. And also, I do think that even the government has consumerism in our schools by having the ROTC.
Yes.
And then also, they in the gyms, they take the physical records of students, and I don't think that's right either. That should be private. So I think there's too much free speech and control in the schools.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Susan Lynn, we've only got a few seconds left. I hear the band tuning up in the background. Real quickly, if people want to find out more about your book, Consuming Kids, or about your group, Stop Commercial Exploitation of Children, what can they do?
They can go to www.commercialexploitation.org. And also, I have a website, consumingkids.com.
Consumingkids.com.
Or www.commercialexploitation.org.
All right. Well, that's great. As I said, the band's tuning up in the background.
Okay.
It's time for us to clear out. I want to thank Susan Lynn for being our guest today on Media Matters.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. Susan's the author of the brand new book, Consuming Kids, The Hostile Takeover of Childhood, being published by New Press. Available at fine booksellers everywhere. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. I'll be back 1 week from today with John Nichols, and then 2 weeks from today with Robert Greenwald. I want to thank Andrea Boyle for being my phenomenal producer this week. All right, bye-bye. See you in 167 hours.
Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Sugar Creek Symphony and Song, an opera and classical music festival in Watseka, Illinois, August 6th through 8th, featuring Gounod's tragic opera Romeo and Juliet. More information at sugarcreekfestival.org.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with scattered showers, the high in the lower 70s with northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, the low in the upper 50s with northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, the high in the mid-70s with north winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. You're listening to WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the University of Illinois. 580 on your AM dial and on the internet at WILL.UIUC.edu. It's 2 p.m. Central Time. A Prairie Home Companion is